All right, welcome back. The final episode of the Water Ski Bro Tour podcast. This week, I've got two guests, Matteo Lizzeri, Marcus Brown. You guys, like, this is, just an incredible season. And this goes back to, you know, when Matteo, on your end, you started organizing these, and I know you had lots of help, but I'm going to give you the credit that I know you deserve. You started organizing all these events in Europe, and 5-6 years ago, you said there's going to be a pro tour. We're going to see a kind of a revitalization of the professional side of water skiing. And then fast forward to this year. And a dozen events around the world there. I mean, there was one week where there was two events in the same week where the skiers were like, you know, pushed to their limits to actually attend the events, not just scratch their heads wondering where they were going to ski next. So the season in review, Matteo. Where do you start with this?
Well, I start with some appreciation for what you said, Trent, because I had an idea of how big this could be years ago, but obviously I had no idea that it would become as well structured and organized with a lot of events. And I'm so pleased to be, you know, in the behind the scenes helping. Yeah, you know, these tournaments happen, but also like as a sheer fan of the sport to follow them. I'm injured. I'm missing the second half of the season, and I'm following like an addict. You know, like every single score from the first skier in the water to the last one in. And yeah, it has been a tremendous season. Lots of events. Lots of. Let's say drama with head-to-heads, with runoffs, with super hard cuts. I mean, I know we'll talk about this, but probably the hardest season to just access to the final, you know? I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it, both as a skier for the tournaments I was able to ski and as a fan of the sport. Marcus, what is your initial impressions now that we're done with the Water Ski Pro Tour season?
Well, I would say, you know, you can't see this, everybody listening, but Matteo put together a killer cheat sheet for the events throughout the year. And as I browse this, every event has a cup, like a trophy, like a World Cup trophy by it, and a little TV emoji. And those two things right there, the cup signifies consistency, signifies continuity, it signifies a tour, because every event you go to that has this cup symbol by it means it's part of the Water Ski Pro Tour. And then the TV, the little TV emoji, is just music to my heart, because that's eyeballs, and that's what our sport needed. So to see this long list of events, and to see the level of competition that you guys touched on, and to see that there's eyeballs on almost every single one of these events, if not every single one of these events. In fact, it's easier sometimes to watch the events on the webcast than it is to be at the event, because you get more information, you know more about what's going on, you get more facts and more data. So I just think that things are at a new level, and it's exciting to get to witness it and to get to be a part of this podcast with you guys.
So if you go, let's just jump right in then. You know, we're not going to go over every single event, but let's just skip with the highlights. So we'll just go right in. One of the most exciting, you know, divisions of the season, like women's slalom.
Yes.
The level of, and man, it's said to death, but I mean, the level of women's slalom has just gone through the roof. You know, if you look, you know, like just the number of 39s being run by you know, a broad spectrum of people now, it's absolutely incredible. So we're just going to start right off, like what stood out? You might as well start with the Malibu Open, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Malibu Open and Regina spending world record 5 at 10
absolutely,
to 5.
Absolutely, you know, incredible, right? I mean, it was, and like to watch her progress through the season, like if you go, you know, if you just go all the way back to June, I just watching Whitney and watching Regina, I just had this feeling like this really could be the year that, you know, not Whitney's long been dominant, but this could be the year where where she outshines Regina for the whole season. And just as it progressed, you know, Regina just kept looking better every weekend, better every weekend. Whether she was, it's hard to say whether she was working on her equipment or whether she was just becoming more refined with her movements as they were required to make her equipment work better. But I've never seen her look as comfortable on a ski as she has looked the last month.
Yeah, no, Regina is looking strong, right? But I would say the thing that made it really exciting for me, and I would venture in saying that women's slalom was the most exciting division of the year, yeah, is the ebb and flows of who's going to win this thing, right? So I remember early episodes, because we've been covering every tournament, but also early season, Whitney looks like she was shooting for the stars, like seemed like super solid. I believe King of Darkness, she ran 39 every time she stepped in the water. Like Whitney seemed okay, like this is dominant season for Whitney. Yes. Then we switched to Europe, where Whitney came for a couple of events or maybe three, and Jamie ruled Europe, right? With the exception of San Gervasio and Monaco, right? But you know, then it looked like it was Jamie's time. And as Jamie was racking up those points, Ali runs 39 in Caiafa. And I remember being on the microphone with Tony and say, man, now that she ran it once, she's going to run it a lot this year, which ended up happening. And Ali made a lot of podiums after that. And then we get back to the US stretch of the fall and Regina just starts climbing. And then the storyline is, can Regina catch up to Jamie and win this thing without heavy skiing one single tournament in Europe, right? So that gave basically Regina very little margin for mistake in order to win this thing because she didn't have any enough backup tournaments, right? Like as a reminder for the listeners, at Water Ski Pro Tour, we take half of the tournaments plus one, right? So Jamie, Ali, those who, you know, basically did US, Europe, US had some backup scores, backup points. But Regina, having not done the European tour, had to perform, win or get podiums consistently any tournament she attended to. So to me, that's why the women's slalom was so interesting. Like, who's going to win this thing? Who, like, the storylines of the tour were unbelievable. And in fact, as we all know, it ended up being Jamie by two mere points ahead of Regina.
You know, the other thing, Matteo, that really strikes me is you guys touched on it, but the level of skiing on the women's side is insane. I mean, you have at least five women, right, who can run 39 now on any given event. Manon, Ali, Jamie, Whitney, Regina, and there's others who are knocking on the door. So in years past, it's been something that deeper 39 to win. And now I think you pretty much almost had to run 39 to win any given event, you know, for the most part.
Yeah. Like if you're, aside from Whitney's dominant start and aside from obviously the world record that Regina did, if for me, like the absolute highlight of the year is Ali Nicholson. Just watching her progress over the last, even like the last 4 years, right? It was just, all of a sudden, it wasn't that long ago where 38 was just not unlocked for, and then 38 was unlocked, and then it, like, wow, this is a girl that she is so consistent to a 39, and then even 2 years ago, it's like, oh, wait, now she's consistent three, sometimes even four at 39, and like the level, the amount that she has progressed in just the last 36 months, like she took that final half step that there's only a small handful of women in the history of the sport that have ever been able to figure out that last combination.
I would say that. And also what I, maybe I'm biased here, but I think like Ali's progression in the last, 3 years kind of came in parallel with her venturing out, doing as many tournaments as possible, putting herself on those, you know, situations on the dock in finals and big events.
But it's still,
you grow, right?
Yeah, and that's certainly part of it, but it still comes down to you can either run 39 or you can't. And in the history of the sport, what is there? Seven, eight people that have ever done it, right?
Nine
people, whatever it is. It's a small handful. So yeah, like she obviously, but you know what? Like she's always been a gritty competitor, right? Like she's always, even when she was a kid, she typically did exactly what she can do in tournament. Like that's, you know, what it's not, innate wouldn't be fair. Like she's, it's not fair to say she was just born with that ability. She's gritty. She's confident. She's determined and she's tough, but now she's all those things and she can run 39.
Yeah.
I don't want to overstep, but I think I see a couple of reasons. Number one, she's committed fully to this by rearranging her work life so that she's basically 6 months focused on skiing. Number two, I think her brother Zane, that she's very close with and grew up skiing with, he's you know, working with ski teams. He's in the collegiate scene. He's ULM. He's involved. And I think that's helped her as well personally, because she's got some more consistent coaching with her brother who, you know, she's very close with. And I think she got stronger this year too. You know, she's a scrappy skier. She can hang on to stuff, but she did get stronger. I don't need to say how she got stronger over the winter, but she definitely got in the gym more. And I think that helped as well to be able to hang on to the stuff that she normally didn't used to hang on to, you know?
Yeah. And to sustain a season, right? Like, I mean, we said it, this year was 12 water ski pro tour events in women and men's slalom, plus some other events that are not even part of the water ski pro tour. So in order to endure a season like this, or even just take the European stretch, there were three tournaments in the span of 9 days, 8-10 days, because it was like weekend, midweek, weekend. Like you have to be, you know, in good, well conditioned to be able to ski at your best during, you know, like with such high pace. And yeah, I was just also mentioning the you know, exposing yourself and being on the dock, because according to my records, she is the only skier who did not miss a single water ski pro tour stop. So there were 12 tournaments, 12 water ski pro tour stops. She skied every single one of them.
Yeah.
So good on Ali.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Yeah,
that's insane.
So let's keep on rolling then. Like the storyline. So, you know, men's jump had a more prominent role in the pro tour this year than years past. Five events. Yeah, Mateo?
Yeah, five events.
And of those, Freddy Krueger, 4 out of the 5 events. Is that correct or no?
I believe 4, but he podium at all the events.
Like podium at all the events.
Points at all the events. I believe 4 out of 5. You may be right. Yes.
Yeah.
Because then Jack won LA Night Jam, correct?
Oh, absolutely. So no, actually that's 3 out of 5 then, because Ryan Dodd won California.
Correct. So 3 out of 5. Yeah.
So then it just, you know, and then that just goes back, you know, like you said, 5 out of 5 podiums. So, and then three out of the five events, he took home the title. And it's just one, it obviously just talks just, you know, just that handle of greatest of all time when it comes to men's jump. It's just, it's, out of all the, you know, out of all the divisions, this is the one that is certainly the easiest to assign greatest of all time without facing too much argument. And then two, it's really interesting, you know, because obviously not part of the pro tour, but there is a world championships coming up this fall. The one event that Ryan attended was the one event that Ryan won. But he also won by simply, you know, he won by the smallest of margins. He won by 1 foot. So it's crazy that Freddie is not only just on the podium every time, but he's dominant. He dominates the entire field when everyone shows up, or whether not everyone shows up. He's still the guy.
You know, if I can speak to that, yes, definitely. And I mean, the label GOAT is pretty easy to step on Freddie's forehead. But I think what's even more impressive is that he dominated or podium in the case of, you know, Eli Nijem or or California, despite the competition, got closer. To me, that's even the more impressive thing, right? So in the heydays of like Ryan versus Freddie, they were like 7 meters ahead of everybody else or 6 meters ahead. Now you have like Taylor, Joel, Jack, you have Louis. We haven't seen Dorian because he's been injured, but Dorian. Now Luca Rockenwald went to the US and he was booting 68-meter jumps. So to me, it's even more impressive that despite the competition is starting to go in the high 60s, approaching 70s, Freddie still is on top. That to me is like is shockingly impressive. You know, like you would think, you know, after what was it 2 years ago when he won the 11th Master? Okay, we've seen everything from Freddie. You know, like what else can he do? Well, he's able to stay atop with kids that are 20 years younger than him or even more, and still beating them on the weekend. To me, that's impressive. Or impressive is not enough to describe.
It's not enough. No, I know you know, I've got a working relationship with him and been friends for a long time, but I'm straight with him. I'm like, hey, like when you take to the water, I stop what I'm doing, and it doesn't matter whether I turn on the webcast or whether I stop what I'm doing at an event. I'm, you know, his level of excellence, and people want to say professionalism, but he loves it, you know, like it's as serious as he is the moment before he hits the water. Watching it come back to the dock, it reminds me of myself when I was a kid. Like he loves to win, but holy crap, he loves to compete, and that's why he's been able to stay so dominant, so competitive for so long.
And he's tough. I mean,
yeah, kind of got to
put that in there because I mean he's been doing this for a long time. Like I'm afraid his age is going to get close to his distance in meters here if we're not careful in the next little bit. So, you know, he's been around for decades and he's still doing it at that elite level, like you guys say. And I think Trent, the word excellence is like, it can't be said better.
Yeah. And, you know, just going back again to the diminishing margins and still be able to perform. I feel that's where jump and slalom are at odds, right? Like, at the shortest lines, everything done properly results in like a buoy more or a buoy less or half a buoy more. But in jump, like if you make a minor mistakes, the further you jump, the bigger the consequences, right? So if you really connect that cut, it's 71. If you don't, it's 64, you know? So the fact that the competition got really close, to me, tells me that like the younger portion of the tour is getting more precise, and yet, you know, Freddie is somewhat more precise than that because he ends up at top, right? So, definitely a really exciting men's jump season. You know, five events. Hopefully, you know, the goal is to push organizers to do more. Like we want to promote 3-event skiing and. And hopefully, you know, like some people that are thinking about doing events or more experienced organizers decide to, you know, add jump to their event if they haven't done so. Speaking of other events, and here I really want to, because you and I, Trent, did the podcast on the Swiss Pro Tricks.
Yes.
I want to hear Marcus' take, right? So we start the pro season, Water Ski Pro Tour season starts with a trick-only event at Swiss. Marcus, when you heard that, what was your reaction and how did you follow along?
Well, I don't know if you just saw, but I posted or reposted from Mastercraft the 2007 US Open, just a recap from Downtown Disney. And, you know, as I was watching that and kind of cutting it into a reel for Instagram, I realized this is awesome. There's all three events. There's slalom, trick, and jump. And to watch Jimmy Seamers and Ace and Mandy Nightingale and Alex Loretano out there. Like this was back when they were still trying to have an equal playing field for trick, slalom, jump. And to see the events this year kickoff with the Swiss Pro was quite cool because there's not very many trick events left, but hopefully that changes. Hopefully this is a sign of things to come, because when you watch the level of volume required to get to the elite level in trick skiing, I think it's mind-numbing if people who are, you know, amateur kind of, you know, recreational skiers were to listen or to hear like a training regime for Pato or for Neely or for any of these elite level trickers who are doing this at the world record level. It's just insane how much goes into it. So for them to not have very many places to get to share that is tragic. It's part of our history. It's part of water skiing's heritage. It's the roots of wakeboarding. I feel like it deserves a place in the spotlight on TV,
sure.
On the webcam.
Yeah, and I think the fact that the 2023 Water Ski Pro Tour season was kicked off with a trick only event, I there was a powerful comment, right? You know, in terms of WSPT's commitment to three event skiing, you know, to start the season with a trick only event just showed the dedication, showed the support of what Water Ski Pro Tour's vision really is.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, like the goal is to get tournaments, like to basically, let's put it this way. The goal is for an episode like today to be possible, meaning there's a season, there's tournaments after tournaments, and there's a storyline about consistent outcomes, right?
Yeah.
We had a start this year with the Swiss Pro Tricks. So obviously right now, as organizers are starting to apply with the Water Ski Pro Tour to have their events as part of the tour for 2024, the hope is that we see a lot of applications about tricks, right? And I mean, what a way for the Swiss Pro Tricks to show what the sport is about and the level that trick skiing has gotten to. I mean, women was won with 11,000 plus, men was won with 12,000 plus. Yep. There was a tied world record in the men in the prelims with Pato. I mean, the level of trick skiing, despite the fact that we haven't been seeing as many tournaments at the pro level, has kept improving. Like,
For sure.
It hasn't stopped, right? And then there's a fun video on our Instagram channel of that sorcery that Dorian pulled off in, I believe it was the second round, where the Ski Line 5 lost the handle and re-caught it out of the water. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh, I certainly remember that. Yeah.
I mean, that was
exactly, exactly as you described. Like, he dropped the handle, kept skiing, and he punched the wake and came up with the handle. Yeah.
Exactly.
If you haven't seen it, go find it.
Yeah, I mean, the instinct, I mean, I don't even know how your instincts go for catching the handle in the water, you know, like, but I mean, it was a great tournament. I believe Erica and Joel came up top, but I mean, fierceful competition, you know, there was more, I think it was three guys that got over 12,000 across the event.
Yep.
12,000, like, which not only, you know, remember, only a few years ago when some tricker posted a 12,000 at some record event, that's all we were talking about in tricks. Wow. You know, and now it happens multiple times from different people in one event. So clearly the sport of trick skiing is evolving. And you know, as a coach, I see it too. I have kids that I coach that trick 8,000 points. 10 years ago, they would have been among the very top in the world. Now it's, hey, wake up, buddy. Like, we got to get to 10,000 immediately, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
like, it's the sport has changed a lot. And it's cool that the Swiss Pro Tricks gave us, you know, a view into that.
Yes. So, obviously, three slalom guys sitting around talking about it. Like, obviously, we're all chomping at the bit. This season for men's slalom, you know, we talked a little bit offline before we started recording. I mean, and again, said to death, but the level is just going through the roof. You know what we didn't see this year though, which, and I'm waiting. And Mateo, Marcus, let me know when you think this is going to happen. When are we going to see a surprise winner? When are we going to see a new winner? Because there's a handful of people that are right there. And it's going to take, you know, the special sort of set of circumstances. Someone is going to have to not run 41 that typically would, and someone's going to have to run 41 that typically wouldn't. But when, and maybe speculate who.
We're close. I mean, how many guys are getting to four at 41 that may or may not have won? Has Dane won an event?
Nope.
Or not Brando?
Yet. Not yet.
Nope.
So there's two big names right there that I would expect at some point to end up on top at the end of the weekend. One of these years.
I mean, Dane got really close in Miami last year, guys. Yep. Like, yeah, that double was the one. Runoff with
that
Nate.
Was the one, right? That's the one. Like, that's the one that, because it hasn't happened yet, that's the one that I'm not going to say keeps him up at night, but that's the one that he probably wakes up to every once in a while being like, oh, that was the one. That was my first win. What, obviously Dane. And you're right. You know, I had this conversation with another slalom nerd buddy of mine the other day, and Brandon Caruso was a name that he brought up also. Like, yep, there. Who else could, who can find that moment of calm to not freak out at four ball, run half at 43 while Freddie and Nate run five at 41? Who else is right there?
I think Steven's somebody who could just end up with like a four or Steven five at 41. Yeah, and. Yep.
And historically, right? Like, I believe since Botas 2019, the only winners of pro events have been Freddie, Nate, Will, or Thomas. Mm-hmm. The one before them was Steven.
Steven.
So, you know, there would already be someone that my money will go to. Of course, you know, considering Dane and Brando and Cole, who, you know, as we know.
That was the other one.
He has been struggling. I think he struggled early this year with a bit of an injury, but, you know, obviously he showed as of recent, he reminded everyone what he's capable of. Those are the names that come to mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So what stood up for the season then? Like, you know, we know there was a lot of 41s ran. We know that people are making it look easier than ever. We know that you essentially had to run 41 if you were going to win an event this year. What stood out?
Well, to me, and our friend Wade says it a lot when he's out and about with the TWBC guys, it's hard to make the finals. But this year, man, was really hard to make the finals. You know, like no matter what event you looked at, it was really challenging. Let's take the last event of the tour, Travers Grand Prix. Eighth tied with three at 41 twice. I mean, crazy. Yeah. Monaco, you had three guys with three at 41 that didn't make the final just because of backup score. So, you know, I feel that in the last few years, the cut has always been between two to three, rarely three. You know, you had a two runoff for making it in, or you needed a piece of three to make it in. Now it's three and you're not guaranteed to be in until you back it up with a good score.
Yeah, and it became commonplace, right? Like we just go back 2 years ago, almost to the day, and when the world championships 2 years ago, three at 41 didn't get you into the final, that was like holy crap. And now it's that's common. Three at 41 and you're not coming back to the dock calm, confident, secure. You're coming back to the dock knowing like, crap, now I've got to produce yet again in the preliminary round.
I mean, I must say, like, I think I was in the episode we did about Monaco. I skied 3 of 41 the first round, and I had this feeling of like, man, okay, like I don't have to worry about a cut now for once. And then sure enough, an hour after my set, I was like, oh, no, I got to ski very well in the second round too to make it through, you know? The sheer depth of the field that is to me also the big storyline in men's slalom. Then if we want to go to podiums and the names that we threw in the mix before, you take Malibu Cup in Lacano. Dane got fourth with 4 at 41. I mean, let it sink in. Like 4:41, you're not on the podium, you know?
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's backup scores. So Brando was third also with 4:41. Freddie second with 5:41. Nate wins with 1:09. I mean, these podiums seemed out of fantasy land only 3 years ago, you know?
For sure. For sure. What, Marcus, so just if you were just going to, you know, reflect on the whole, was there a standout performance for you? Like that, that goosebump moment or someone that, you know, was it, which event or whose performance kind of stood out if you, when you recall in the season?
Well, I mean, just immediately the one that stands out, there's two that stand out to me. One of them, probably because it's most recent, would be Freddie at that last event. You know, he had
that's
to
exactly
run
exactly where my head went. Yeah.
He had to run 41 and get a full one at 43, you know, 9.75. So that was like, that's pretty clutch. You know, that's what he lives for. That's what we live for to watch. I think the other standout performance would be Allie running 39 for the first time in a pro event.
Yeah, for sure. That was a goosebump one too.
That was goosebumps. Yeah, for sure. What about you, Trent?
I mean, I'm with you on that one. If I just had to pick one, you know, and again, low hanging fruit probably because it is the most recent, but it was exactly that. It was Freddie Winter watching Nate go out in the final. Nate runs half at 43. And if you hadn't seen it, it was, you know, he ran a whatever, just like they do. They run beautiful 41s. Nate came in rather hot into one ball at 43. And I think because he was disappointed, because he knew that he wasn't going to get the two ball, he definitely did a more lackadaisical S turn, you know, and you could body language said, like, it wasn't a harried S turn. It wasn't like he didn't have a lot of emotional conviction on it. It was kind of like I screwed up. I'm an S turn. The saying picks his head up and he had traveled too far down the lake and he was on that ramp. I mean, he narrowly missed the ramp. He was forced to let go. So it was a bit of a tactical error, I think, just from, you know, a momentary lapse. And then exactly that, like, I mean, Freddie had to leave the dock last gear of the day, you know, last event of the season. And he is exactly that. He had to run 41. And then even after he ran 41, he had just watched, a botched S turn and knew the parameters of where the ramp is in relation to the course is tighter than some other sites. And exactly that, like he, and even the commentators, like they're saying, like, he can't S turn. Nate just showed you that there's not enough room to S turn on this site. And he did exactly that. So it was, Freddie never short on emotion. Thankfully,
right.
You know, it's why we watch sports, you know, and it's, and just, you know, watching his reaction to what he had just done, I know I'm not alone in this. It reminds me of why we did this, why we dedicated our life to this. It was just for the opportunity to maybe feel something, what he showed us that he was feeling in that moment. It was absolutely amazing. I loved it.
I agree. Hey, I got a quick question off topic, but I want to ask you guys, because maybe there's a play for something more exciting with the Water Ski Pro Tour versus conventional skiing. And that would be with men's slalom specifically. We're getting to the place where guys are running 41 off, but 43 gets to be quite problematic. I mean, the world record isn't even halfway down the course. Like, what about 42 off? What about changing the increment so that we can see some more excitement and some more close battles instead of talking about S turning one ball, which is crazy to think about? What about, you know, allowing these guys to get a little further down the course after they run 41 off?
10 meters flat. I like it.
No, I would think about that for less than 2 seconds before I signed off on it. I'd be like, 100%, 100%.
Maybe we should try it provisionally at one of the Water Ski Pro Tour events.
Because it's certainly because you're not messing with history, right? I mean, the record would still stand as it stood. But no, yeah, I wouldn't have to give that thought before signing off on it being a great idea. But, and remember too, though, like before we, and I know this is not what you were implying, but we know that pass is runnable, right? And we know because, you know, Nate has been to three ball twice. And we know that anyone that watched Travers Grand Prix last year and saw the way that Will exited one ball out of 41 on his way to two ball last year, I mean, it's absolutely runnable, and it will get run. But yes, a 10-meter line as opposed, going straight to 975. Sign me up.
The flip side is those guys. None of them are going to be for that because look, everybody's gunning for the world record once they get to that point. So
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's a tough call.
So before we jump into women's jump, because we haven't talked about it, and I think there the storyline is one and strong, especially given, you know, what's about to happen next week. I have three moments of the slalom that we didn't mention, or I guess we touched upon somewhat. So we said about the level of women and the depth of women running 10.75 or 39 off.
Yep.
So Whitney won the Monaco Slalom Cup with two at 10.2. Those were 11 10.25s in a row in the tour since the beginning of the tour. So like when we say that Whitney started strong, Whitney started really strong. Like she ran every single 39 she skied in a water ski pro tour event in the US where the tour started, hopped over to Europe, kept running 39s. So to me, that was like even, you know, thinking back of what you, Trent, mentioned to me early on in this season of the Water Ski Pro Tour podcast. I mean, she was skiing really, really strong. Mm. The second one is the semifinal here in San Gervasio. Manon is top seed, or at least she's starting off the dock first, runs 4 at 10.7. So Ali has to take a piece of 5 at 10.7 and makes it. That was, to me, that was really a showing of, you know, okay, Ali made it to the next level, right? Like the weekend before she ran 39, as we said, in Caiafa, showed up to San Gervasio. She needed a piece of 5 to proceed to the head-to-head final, which for a left foot forward means turning four ball and get to 5. She did. And that to me was like probably the most exciting head-to-head pairing I saw this year.
Yeah.
And then Tigas winning Malibu Open, which makes him the oldest ever male slalom skier to win a pro tour event.
No way. Officially the oldest. Hey,
yeah.
That's a big deal.
Taken away. Andy had that one and Thomas took it away.
Really Malibu cool. Open. Really cool.
Yeah. That's big. That's a big moment.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up with women's jump. Mateo, how many events on the Pro Tour feature women's jump this season?
So this season we had 4 events with women's jump, and the story is one. There's 2 storylines for this season, in my opinion. One, Anna Strelcova's domination. So she won 3 out of 4 events, and basically went nearby the 57, 58 meters mark every single tournament. Unfortunately, the other storyline is that there were a lot of injured women jumpers. There was a couple of them, Brittany Greenwood and Lauren Morgan, coming back from ACL surgery. Unfortunately, the depth of the field wasn't what it can be and what in the last few years has shown to be. Just due to injuries. It's one of those things that can happen in sports. In a sport as extreme as jumping, happens a little bit more often. And so this year, we sadly, we didn't see as deep of a field as we know is out there. But that makes me even more excited for next year. Because for sure. There are, you know, we saw what Lauren can jump, and we know what Lauren can jump. With Jacinta not really being around the tournaments, the storyline is somewhat similar to 2 years ago, meaning Hannah now has that spot. Who can challenge her? Who's going to be the person challenging her?
Exactly. And in keeping with that, though, like, so this year was different in that, you know, so Hannah Strelcova, you know, just dominated, right? I mean, she won, and she won handily every event. And in the past, you know, there was the idea of an asterisk beside it with that reason. Jacinta's not here. But that's the level that, you know, for as much as Hannah has now improved, you know, that that asterisk isn't stamped in there like you know, indelibly like it was in the past, because, you know, like now she's jumping 190 feet.
For sure.
So and again, which I think, you know, because it just speaks to, like, even though, you know, part of her competition is has left the sport, however, whether it's briefly or whether it's permanently, I'm not exactly sure, she's continued to push and continue to strive, and it's, you know, she's jumping distances now that while, you know, Jacinto is certainly capable, it wouldn't be just like, you know, in years past where you would just assume Jacinto was going to win no matter what. Now she's jumping 190. And this season was the first year watching her ski that I felt confident in my thought that this girl can go, she can go 200 feet.
Yeah. I would say the same. Yeah. That asterisk is fading away, right? I mean, she's gone 190 often. A poor set would be high 80s, you know? So
yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's already impressive.
I just think Hannah needs to take it a little more seriously.
That girl, she works and works and works and works. Yeah.
She is so dedicated, man. It's crazy. Yeah. It's cool to see, though.
It is. Like, she's not accidentally the best in the world.
No.
Look, good. Guys, overall, yeah. I want to thank you personally for having joined us in this podcast that we opened this year at Water Ski Pro Tour to primarily, you know, keeping the listenership aware of the tournaments and recaps. We had a couple of interviews. I am happy to sort of take the opportunity to announce that, you know, we'll be doing some interviews during the winter as the tour is not active. But personally, thank you for hanging in with me and covering this season. I think easily the best season of pro skiing I have witnessed, and I'm looking forward to narrate next one with you guys.
Indeed. Been fun to be a part of it. Thanks for helping organize and perpetuate and carry on this effort, because this is kind of what it's all about.